You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The National Party has proposed creating a social investment fund in a callback to a signature policy of former leader Bill English. Social investment spokesperson Nicola Willis proposed funding the policy in collaboration with philanthropists. For my weekly catch-up with National's Dr. Shane Retty, we spoke about this policy, how it differs from the current approach, and how exactly funding through donations might play out. I first asked Shane to describe the policy.
So the Social Investment Fund policy is an attempt to lift social investment back up into the priority that we wish to give it, which fundamentally talks to some of the work that Bill English did and now led by Nicola Willis. And what that says is that we know that there are times in a lifetime when you can intervene that changes the trajectory of potentially that person's life. And so social investment talks about the right investment at the right time for the right people. It's based on those three principles. And so the announcement that we've made is that we want to lift up social investment back into a high priority. And ideally we'd like to fund it in collaboration with the private philanthropic sector, in collaboration with central government.
How does a social investment approach differ from the government's social well-being policy?
The government's social well-being policy, one of the very first things they did when they came to government was remove individual identifiers. What that means is instead of being able to specifically focus on one family as being most likely to benefit from an intervention, you don't have that ability to target at that sort of level where the investment should go. And so it is quite different, and it does have very specific outcomes. It's also very data-driven to help you identify who the people are and what the intervention might be. And I'll give you an example. What we know is that the earlier in a child's life, so certainly in that first 1,000 days, and I would contend even antenatally, actually, that interventions there can have a substantial impact on the trajectory of a child's life.
Is such an approach likely to entail greater social funding or only a reprioritization of funding?
Look, I think because it's that combination of philanthropy and that combination of a government contribution, the two together may well be greater. So it may well be adding new pie, not just redistributing existing pie. Part of that may be because we in philanthropy can see the data-driven outcomes that we'll hold ourselves accountable to. They truly see impact for their philanthropic dollar, and so they're more inclined to say, yes, I want to contribute to that particular enterprise, that particular initiative.
So on this topic of philanthropic funding, is there any idea as to what portion of the policy platform might be funded in this way, and how exactly might it work mechanically?
So what we know is that initially there'll be some seed funding from government, and then as we get underway, we'd like to work with the philanthropic sector to see what their contribution could or should be, what they would like to do. But initially it will be with small amounts of government seed funding. The mechanics, as you say, as to how much and how the sector contributes, that's still to be determined. What we're giving here is a significant direction of travel as to an initiative and objectives we'd like to achieve, and inviting the philanthropic sector to join with us to do that.
You've used the term philanthropic sector. Can it really be described in this way, given that philanthropy tends to be, you know, a number of sort of discrete large donations rather than a constant stream of income? How does this actually fund a policy?
So a good example would be something we took to the 2020 campaign, which was the lifelong education savings, which is what they do in Singapore, where over a lifetime people contribute, faiths contribute. Instead of someone's 21st birthday, for example, they put it into their lifelong saving account, and that lifelong saving account on an educational basis can be used to fund that person's education over a lifetime. So we know offshore there are certainly protocols for where there can be continuous funding rather than the Big Bang funding that you're describing. But look, you know, initially, any funding that the private sector is able to collaborate and contribute with us, we will work with thanks and give them outcomes that show they're getting value for their philanthropic dollar.
How would you explain simultaneously abolishing the top tax rate and asking, I assume, the wealthiest New Zealanders or some of the wealthier New Zealanders to voluntarily chip in? Is this something that can actually be relied on?
Oh, yes. I think when we've been out and tire-kicked this across a number of demographics, and there is certainly interest in contributing to social investment. Social investment was one of the highlight philosophies, if you like, that Bill English brought forward, and it had quietened as other imperatives sort of overtook it. But this is a signal that we think it's important, and certainly the sector and others in the NGO sector, not just the philanthropic sector, are quite excited about this.
Given the importance of social investment as a part of a government's sort of mandate to rule and their responsibilities, is this really something that can be left to voluntary contributions rather than, you know, the mechanisms that are already in place to extract a certain amount of justified income through taxation to fund the important social programs?
So what we've already said is that the initial contribution will be government funded, and depending on what that collaboration looks like with the philanthropic sector, government funding is likely to be hand in hand with the philanthropic funding. It just depends how fast and how quickly this ramps up, whether the government funding withdraws and is then able to be completely run by philanthropic enterprises, or whether government continues to contribute. That's still to be observed, but certainly in the beginning it will be government funding.
To what extent do you believe that philanthropists would choose to fund a program such as this one, given that in the absence of their money, the government may very well step in and fund it instead? Might they not put their dollar elsewhere where the money wouldn't otherwise be there, and where they can contribute independent initiatives that wouldn't have been funded otherwise?
So philanthropy understands potentiation. They understand that a dollar of their money with a dollar of government money can give you a 1 + 1 = 3. And so our observation across a range of projects is that when central government becomes involved, the tools of central government, and actually the signal that it sends a signal to other philanthropic interests of, oh, government's involved in this, so there is a backstop. The big player is also in the room. They've triaged it. They've brought their tools of scrutiny and said, yes, this is an initiative that's good. Often many philanthropists are just looking for a government signal that they want to be involved to get some certainty as to the robustness of any given initiative, and then they join as well.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.